Hello, everybody. Dennis Prager in my home. Hello to you in your home or wherever you're watching, anywhere in the world. And it really is around the world. And it's an honor to be with you from my home. By the way, that is not Otto. Otto has not undergone a canine transformation. This is the other dog, Snoopy. I have no idea why Otto was not in his place today. But we give our dogs a great deal of freedom. It's a big belief in our home. And so that's Snoopy. Say hi, Snoop. Okay. Snoop's relaxed. He's not as relaxed as Otto, but pretty relaxed. And why wouldn't he be? Do you realize that the dogs in our home cannot go more than 20 feet without a bed awaiting them? There are more dog beds in my home than human beds. I rib my wife about this a great deal, and she doesn't find it very funny. I just have, for the record, I think it's hilarious. She doesn't. She thinks it's appropriate. Be that as it may, they're a great asset to our lives. Okay, so I offer you some thoughts, as you know by now. In case this is the first time, this is completely non-scripted. There are no notes, no anything. Just my way of talking to you about what is on my mind, and then taking your questions from and about what is on your mind. Well, one thing that's on my mind, this will help, I think, a great deal, because people are truly not clear on this issue, and I love clarity, and especially moral clarity. That's number one in many ways in my life. I've always wanted that since I was in high school, moral clarity. How do you assess good and bad, right and wrong? There is much ado, there has been for years, with regard to President Trump, Donald Trump's comments on a tape that was recorded years earlier. It's called, what is it, the Planet Hollywood, I think it's called, tape. Is that right, Planet Hollywood? Or something to that effect. And wherein he was talking to another guy and speaking in a somewhat gross way about what a famous and rich person could do, that women will allow a famous and rich man to do. It is, you know, touch them what would normally be inappropriately. But remember, he did say, this is what they let you do. Now, it's gross and all of that. My point is not Trump. My point is not what he said. My point is this. I don't care what people say privately, nor should you. That is not an accurate indicator of a person's character. Is that clear? Private talk is not an indicator of a person's character. There is no one alive who, if everything they said privately had been recorded and then allowed to the world, could not be made to be look like a terrible person. That person doesn't exist. The whole point, or a point, of private talk is to vent, is to feel free to vent, is to say silly things, is to say gross things. I don't think that should be the great majority of your conversation, obviously. But that is one of the elements of private talk with friends, with a spouse. I mean, think of what people have said. I always give my example of, you would think I hated every group on earth if you heard what I say about bad drivers. Whatever group the bad driver is in, I hate that group for that minute. Men, women, this ethnic group, this religious group, it doesn't matter. Of course, but because it doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. But hey, if you recorded me, then, whoa, Dennis, oh my God, do you realize what he said? It is immaturity, and we live in the age of immaturity. It is immaturity to assume you can assess people by what they say privately. And I give example after example. Do you know that I wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal about 19 years ago, it's a while ago, when it came out that Hillary Clinton had said some expletives to a Jew who worked for her husband and herself. And it was, there were people said, oh, wow, Hillary Clinton's an anti-Semite. Well, as a Jew and as one who's written a book on anti-Semitism, I wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal saying she's not an anti-Semite because you can't judge people based on what they say privately. Should she have said it? No, but that's beside the point. Now, if she said anti-Semitic things publicly, that's very bad. Very bad. There's a world of difference between what people say privately. Another Jewish example is Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon apparently said negative things about Jews and in politics and so on. And then he saved Israel's life in the 1983 Yom Kippur War. That's a little more important than what the guy happened to say privately and that had happened to be recorded. Just this is so significant. By the way, the private public issue is important, not just about speech. It's important about everything, right? Urinating privately, that's okay, isn't it? Urinating publicly, that's not okay, is it? The public-private distinction in moral or the immoral arena is enormous. But we live in the age of stupidity. There's no wisdom in our age. And you young people have been the recipients of so little wisdom at school, anti-wisdom. Oh, look at what he said privately. Oh, look at what he said privately. Who cares? Who cares? You shouldn't care. Anyway, you would be judged at least as badly for stuff you have said. And especially when men get into a particularly male juvenile mood and talk about the women. It means nothing what men say in that regard. It's not, I'm not a fan of it, but it isn't a statement of their character. Now, if somebody says privately, you know, I'm planning to kill so-and-so. Yes, then it matters. Okay, that's why a psychiatrist or a priest should tell the police if someone says, I'm going to kill somebody. But otherwise, like a lawyer, right? What people tell their lawyer privately is private, correct? You can't ask the lawyer, what did your client say privately? You can't ask a psychiatrist or psychologist or a priest in confession. Because we understand the private realm is unique and unto itself. It doesn't speak well for the people who go, well, look at what he said. Oh, he's a misogynist. Oh, give me a break. Misogynist because of comments that he made in private, not ever knowing that he's being recorded. This is not a good sign for our society that we take we now release tapes of private conversations. It is not a good sign, not about the individual, but about the society. Is that clear? Good. Let's go to your questions. The private-public distinction is huge. All right. So if we always begin with a video question, and this is from an American who is living in France, correct? Correct. All right. So let's see what our questioner has to say.
Hi, Dennis. Bonjour. My name is Carrie, and I'm an American who is currently living in France. And my question for you is, what is your opinion on the connection between our feminized societies and the flood of male Muslim migrants into Europe? Also, do you find it ironic that feminists are defending Muslims from criticism despite Islam representing the ultimate patriarchy? Thanks for taking my question. Salut.
Salut. Bonjour. Au revoir. Okay, we press our buttons here. All right, so I didn't fully follow the first part, Carrie. So I would love you to, send me an email or something explaining my opinion on the connection between our feminized societies, our societies have been feminized, and the flood of male Muslim immigrants into Europe. You might mean that will this have an effect on the feminized society, but I don't know exactly. By the way, our societies are feminized. And by that, what people mean is that feelings have overtaken reason. Women, the female of the human species is known. Not every woman is as true of course. Nothing is true of everybody. But when we speak about the feminine, we speak about the nurturing capacity of the human being. And there are women who can't nurture, and there are men who do. I know all the existence of exceptions doesn't mean the rule is not accurate. Okay, that's another important point. So we have substituted feelings and nurturing and compassion for justice and standards and so on. There really has been, in that regard, a feminization of society. That is correct. What the connection between that and the flood of male and Muslim immigrants into Europe, I don't know exactly what you mean, but I do know this next part. Is it ironic that feminists are defending Muslims from criticism despite Islam representing the ultimate patriarchy? Well, I mean, the feminists are defending, forget the patriarchy issue. Feminists do not allow, because feminists are generally on the left, no criticism of Islam is allowed. Criticism of Christianity is expected. Criticism of Islam is Islamophobic. By the way, how come there's no Christianophobic or Christophobic? Isn't that interesting? Nobody hates Christians? Isn't that amazing? Every group in the world is hated. Jews are hated. Muslims are hated. Blacks are hated. Hispanics are hated. Asians are hated. But Christians are not. Isn't that amazing? The group that is getting killed in the greatest numbers today on earth, Christians, but they're not hated. Because the left controls our vocabulary and they don't want to acknowledge Christophobia, if you will, or Christianophobia. So it's the feminists, they don't say anything in this regard. The veil, for example, if you criticize the veil, you're called Islamophobic. I thought if you criticize the veil, you're pro-woman. There was a man who was the head of Reform Judaism, rabbi who's on the left, and he told a group of the Islamic Society of North America, I have the quote directly, he told them, I respect the veil. He's so politically correct. He announces I don't respect the veil. If he respects the veil, he should wear one. Respect the veil. The veil dehumanizes a woman. Okay, period. End of issue. When we have a saying in English, right? Man, this guy is so humiliated he can't show his face in town. Right? Can't show your face is humiliating. Not ennobling, let alone the reduction of a woman to a piece of black material. And you say, well, in America, well, then they're reduced to sex objects. Let me just say this, whereas I'm a big fan of modesty, nevertheless, in terms of human rights, there's no comparison between a woman dressing as she wishes, however sexy it might be, versus being covered from head to toe. Please, let's live in the real world. Feminists have been generally silent, as the whole left has, on the treatment of women in many Islamic societies. Not all, nothing is all. Okay, thank you for your question. All right. Hi, Mr. Prager, as a fellow cigar lover, I'm wondering, Joe 18, Duluth, Minnesota. What are your thoughts on raising the federal tobacco wage to 21 from 18? I'm ambivalent. I understand it. I thought from the beginning that the war against tobacco was morally misplaced because the war should have been against alcohol. Nobody kills anybody because they smoked. Vast numbers of people kill other people because they drank. From child abuse to spousal abuse to murder to rape to drunk driving. So that's another issue. I smoked my first cigar at 16. I let my kids smoke a cigar in their late teens. So... what am I going to tell you? My worry is that if a father does what my father did, lets their kid smoke a cigar, I don't know, Child Protective Services can come in. You're abusing your child in this sick world that we live. I don't know. He has a P.S. I will graduate next year as an aircraft mechanic, so if you ever get a private jet, I can fix it for you. Thank you. I'm speechless. The chances of my getting a private jet are as great as your chance of winning the lottery, because I would have to win the lottery to be able to have. By the way, I would love a private jet. I fly too much, and I could do. I could return home. You know, I give a speech. This is what happens all the time. I give a speech somewhere out outside of Los Angeles, and I speak at night. Speech is over by, let's say, 10 o'clock. I would love to fly home, even if it's from the East Coast. I get home at 2 a.m. I could handle that. Rather than have to spend the whole next day waiting. I broadcast, then I come home the next night. It would save me like 20 hours of being away if I had a private jet. Okay, not that any of you should care, but I'm just telling you, I'm responding to that. Okay, next. Okay, next here. Lee, 19, Churchville, Pennsylvania. Hello, Lee. Hi, Dennis. Hi. In one of your fireside chats, you claimed that the rise of secularism was a contributing factor to the rising levels of mass shootings since the 1950s. If that truly is the case, then why are there very few gun deaths in secular nations such as the Baltic states, Scandinavia, and Japan, to name a few in comparison to the United States? Well, as it happens, we have the same rates. In many of our states, North Dakota has the exact same rate as the Baltics. A disproportionate number of our gun shootings are from minorities. Now, just to say that is to be accused of racism, because the left only knows labels, not facts. This has nothing to do with racism. It has to do with either it's true or it's not true. Wherever you have, like Japan, a completely monochromatic, monolithic, homogeneous, ethnic, religious, racial society, you will have far fewer, far less crime. America was based on the belief that we could have people of every background and not kill each other if we have moral religion to suppress the urge to commit a crime. That was the belief. You cannot have, believe me, with the influx of mass numbers of people from the Middle East in Europe, you already have a great increase in crime. So that's what happens. It's just, you know, Japan is all Japanese. Lithuania is all Lithuanian, except for some Russians. Okay, that's the way it is. That's easy. North Dakota is basically largely homogeneous, and it has the same rates as or lower rates of crime even than many European countries. The United States banked on the belief that we could have people from everywhere if we unify, e pluribus unum, if we unify as Americans, and if we have In God We Trust. There's an American Trinity. In God, it's on every coin. In God We Trust, e pluribus unum, from any one, and liberty. You need all three. All right, let's see here. Levon, 45, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hello, and thank you for all you do for so many. Thank you. In a recent chat, you mentioned you don't like or engage in small talk. However, it seems you do end up having very good discussions with others. How do you skip the small talk and get to the depth-filled conversation? Number one, I tend to avoid parties. I knew in high school, I already realized in high school, the more people, and there are always exceptions, as always, there's exceptions. But generally, as the number of people increased, the depth of the conversation decreased. That was my rule. I made up this rule in high school. This is not new in my life. So I try to do my socializing with a few individuals at a time. That's why I even in high school, I didn't like parties, and I certainly don't like them today, because nothing happens. The way that I avoid small talk is by asking people questions about their life. And people love to talk about their life. And I love hearing about their life, and I have no interest in talking about me, because I get to talk about me to millions of people, so I don't need to at a dinner. So I'm very happy to hear about others' lives. And then I just ask more probing questions, and people are never offended. They know I'm not. Uh-oh. Snoopy has had enough. What do you say, Snoop? Is he in the video at all? Okay. You know, when a dog shakes his head, this is my theory. Dogs shake their heads. It is their way of saying what happened, happened. And now I'm moving on with life. That's how I look at it. Okay. He's lying down. Why he would leave a bed to go to the floor is one of the puzzles of life. Okay. Next. Davi, 23, in, I'm sure I will not correctly pronounce this, Arjeplog, or Arjeplog, Sweden. Hey, Mr. Prager, I've been in the pursuit of wisdom for the past 2 years. Good man. I became a Christian during that time. A Christian in Sweden. Wow. That is sort of like a snowball in hell. It's a poor analogy, but you get my point. Not many snowballs in hell. Thank you for the wisdom. I'm not comparing Sweden to hell or you to a snowball. I just want to make that clear. Thank you for the wisdom and teachings you share. I have two questions. The first, what was the greatest gift you ever received? Second, did you earn it? For me, it was life and no. In other words, so for him, his greatest gift was life and he didn't earn it. That's correct. Thank you so much. I love the Fireside Chats and send greetings to Otto all the way from northern Sweden. Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you. That's very sweet. I think you'll have to open the door because Snoopy is going to get anxious about not seeing his mother. Okay. All's good. And now, for the first time in a long time, we have an empty bed. Where is Otto? I guess he's with his mom, right? Okay. He's
poking his head in the window.
Has he been looking in? Mm-hmm. Maybe he realizes that they began without me. All right, be that as it may. Is he there? All right, anyway. So what is the greatest gift that I ever got? Well, okay. So, of course, life is a gift, but it's not the thing that I would have thought of. I would have thought of health. I mean, that's a... Listen, to be honest, I pinch myself on how many gifts I've been given. But many people have been given health, and many people, obviously, everyone's been given life. Everyone living has been given life. And obviously, everybody will die, so that gift will go. Although I do believe in an afterlife. I ought to talk to you about afterlife one time. That would be a good talk. But off the top of my head, I was given clarity as a gift at a very early age because it meant a lot to me. I would hear people speak and I would think, what do they really mean? And what is right and what is wrong? Moral clarity, every type of clarity. And I was given a gift. I was given a gift, obviously, to speak. So I know that I've been given gifts. I know that there are arenas that I don't have any gifts. You know, I draw a picture, for example, on the same primitive level I did when I was in kindergarten. I have not advanced since kindergarten the ability to draw. But there are people who obviously are, everybody, do you know that everyone has gifts? Everyone. The trick is to figure out what they are, and then use them to do good. Okay. What's our timing here?
24.
All right. Gene in McKinney, Texas, 54 years old. Other than the accordion, do you play any other musical instruments? Yes, the piano, but not, but really poorly. And I haven't played it in years. What I realized, I came to love classical music when I was in high school. I had already been taking the accordion. It's a crazy story why I ever took the accordion, but I did. There was nobody in my family who could even read music, and I refused to do homework. So my parents said, take a musical instrument. I said, fine. We looked up instruments in the telephone directory, what was called the Yellow Pages, and the first one was A for accordion, so I took accordion. When I fell in love with music, I realized I would never play the piano, so I immediately took piano, because there's no classical music for accordion. Ladies and gentlemen, a grand entrance is now being made by the hero of our fireside chats. Otto, great to see you. Great to see you. Everybody's happy to see you. Now, it's like we had there was a vacuum that he filled. Good timing, really good timing. So I realized I would never play the piano well enough to meet my own standards. But I did start teaching myself to read scores, and I taught myself in high school, and I studied it the rest of my life to read orchestral scores with the hope that one day I might be able to conduct orchestras. That dream has been fulfilled, culminating in my conducting a Haydn symphony a couple of years ago at the Disney Concert Hall in Los Angeles, one of the most prestigious halls in the world. I was very honored. Okay, let's do one more here. Okay, that would take a long time, that one. The one from Indianapolis, remember, that would take a long time. Lazar, 46, Stuttgart, Germany. Hello, Dennis. How would you explain why there are almost no conservative voices and practically no conservative political parties in Germany? P.S. I'm living in Germany, but I'm from Bulgaria. I have once you mentioned that you feel sympathy for my country, I was so happy to hear that. I have a very warm spot for Bulgaria. I have always have, and for Bulgarians. One day I'll talk about why, but I do. Anyway, look, there are almost no conservative voices almost anywhere on the continent. There might be some in England, in the UK. I mean, there are some, but as we understand conservatism in the United States, social and economic conservatism, you virtually have none. There is a guy in Germany, Kassian, who has a great podcast. You should all go to it. He is a German who speaks perfect English, and he is a true conservative voice in Germany and I think in the world. I really want to see him succeed. He's terrific. But unfortunately, the European mindset has since World War I, not two, War One, has rejected a lot of the premises of what we in America call conservative, including the idea that you love the nation you're in. Nationalism, which could be used for good or evil, like anything else, everything could be used for either good or evil. Came into disrepute, so that died. The idea of big government arose in Germany in the late 19th century. And you know why? To keep Germans from moving to America. They were basically bribed. Socialism is bribery. Vote for us, we'll give you more. Stay in our country, we'll give you more. We'll give you more, we'll give you more, we'll give you more. And that leads to the end of societies. For many reasons, some of which I'll talk about another time. That's a good one to talk about, too. But my hope is that PragerU will touch enough people in enough countries that these great values, which are universal, can make a better world for everybody. That's a nice note to end on. All right, y'all. See you next week. I'm Dennis Prager. Thanks for watching. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.